I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
And it's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Wednesday, October 18th, 2023 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It is a wild and dystopic ride, to be sure. And how wild and dystopic? Well, the truth is sort of hiding in plain sight, and there are a lot of lies that surround it, and the truth is used to promulgate lies, as is not uncommon, and but the truth is out there in plain sight, and we can find it if we go looking for it, which reminds me of Jesus speaking about the narrow way and the broad way, and it's interesting that you can enter through the broad way a variety of different ways. You can enter backwards, upside down with your eyes closed, maybe as a passenger, you know, in someone else's vehicle, but if you enter through the narrow gate, you are looking for it because you find it the way that it's put in the NASB 95 translation. Enter through, this is Matthew 7, starting in verse 13. Enter through the narrow gate. For the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. They enter through it. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it. They find it. You don't enter through it by accident. You find it because you're looking for it. So the truth is out there, and it's just a matter of searching for it. It's probably not some bandwagon scenario. So, after yesterday's broadcast, a dear friend did some digging, and on the controversial subject of Pike's letter to Mazzini, there's actually quite a bit of information. I think we will come back to this later. It was written about more than once, more than by just Cardinal Rodriguez. And there are books that were published around the end of the First World War. One of them was Rodriguez's book, published in 1925, obviously. But then there is this other anonymous book, some say is attributed to Nesta Webster, published in 1920, titled The Cause of World Unrest. So that obviously is shortly after the conclusion of World War One, which is an interesting conversation in itself. You know, we played the infamous Patrick Claussen clip yesterday, the traditional way America gets to war. People don't really, I don't think they understand that. If we really understood that, you know, I hear talk of the military, you know, there's a shortage of recruits, and oh my goodness, we never saw this coming. The military has planned on whittling down forces for decades. I talked about that when this broadcast first started, going on 20 years ago. So I was talking about that 15 years ago, the Army After Next and the Army 21 project, for example, that talk about how regular forces will be pared down, and it's, you know, the military is moving toward a hybrid force, and you can see that. The regular service is more of a basically just a place to pluck from which to pluck folks into special forces. And then from there, obviously, the idea is to pull people into extracurricular service, as it were, for the PMCs, the private military contractors, the Dying Corps, Blackwater, you know, Z Academy, whatever now, et cetera, et cetera. And that's been openly discussed in, you know, Rand monographs and other places for decades now. So if we really understood the mechanics of where things are going, it's difficult, I think, for most of us to see, because it moves at glacial speed. And so there's that. It's also hard to believe that things are just planned and that we go along with plans. But when you think about it, most people acclimate themselves to whatever comes down the road. How many people say absolutely not? Look at what happened with the COVID shenanigans. How many people are saying we refuse to do this or that? We absolutely refuse. How many large groups of people are completely unwilling? Do you know people who said no at any point to any of the shenanigans? You know, people who didn't want to wear a mask or didn't want to get some kind of vaccination for work or something like that, to resist that impelling force is almost impossible. And most people don't. And so things, you know, if you hold to the stratagem of gradualism, like the Fabians obviously did and do, then it's just a matter of time. The doctrine of the inevitability of gradualism. Eventually, we'll get them all. And so it becomes a matter of psychological warfare that plays out over time. there's an element of learned helplessness, obviously, you know, resistance is futile kind of thing. And people go along with stuff. It's hard to imagine. But I think if we really understood, for example, the traditional way America gets to war, then military recruiting would immediately suffer an overwhelming loss of recruitment. Who would send their child to fight for something that's entirely a put-up job? There are no real wars. There are no, as I said earlier this week on Monday, I think it was, there are no terrorists except, well, what I said on Monday was there are no terrorists except those that are created. But that's not exactly accurate. I think of George W. Bush after September 11, 2001, saying you're either with us, you're either with the terrorists, or you're with us, which is, you know, isn't that the same folks? So there are no terrorists in the theater other than those that are created. But the real terrorists are those that create the theater and the terrorists, the so-called terrorists. I think that's a more honest way of putting it. Anyway, if we really understood that that's how things work and that's really how things work, if we could really get our minds around that, who would send their child to fight and potentially die for theater? And the more you start to think about this, the more you think that there are gangs that are really, they operate like cults all around us. Because if you try to tell a lifer something like that, a military service member who maybe is still serving and has spent most of their adult life in military service, or maybe just retired after 10, 15, 20 years, something like that or more, you can't tell those people this. It operates like a cult because it blinds people. And there are so many of these cults running around. They're everywhere. The cult of Donald Trump, the cult of identity politics and, you know, Biden nonsense, the cult of victimhood or victim psychopathy. You know, these people, I'm the voice for these people. You know, the military and other cults, obviously, gangs and cults, they're everywhere. And you can see that it operates like a gang and a cult when people gather around it very closely and are unwilling to hear any reasoned argument against involvement in their gang and their cult. And they defend their kidnapper. It's pretty crazy. It is a remarkable thing to see. You know, for those who doubt, to go from high level to low level, basically, I would say there are a lot of places you can go. Those who say, for example, military service isn't a put-up job. And we're not all just pawns. From high to low, I would say maybe you start with Patrick Claussen's shocking intimation regarding the traditional way America gets to war. I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. I'm being very serious. I mean, I'm being a little glib, obviously, in reference to Patrick Claussen. And he, you know, I wrote a post back in 2019 about the word episode called titled What's in a Word? Because in that excerpt, Claussen keeps saying episode. He uses the word episode repeatedly. You may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people, you know, for World War II. Some people might think that Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall he had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Vietnam, you may recall that they had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. Episode. So what's in a word? Why is he using the word episode? Well, because if you're paying attention, he says the traditional way America gets to war is through these false flag operations. The Gulf of Tonkin never happened. Certainly not the way that we're led to believe. It never happened. There are some interesting folks involved, like Jim Morrison's dad, for example. The Lusitania was an entirely orchestrated situation, which James Perloff has proved. The cables between Edward Gray and Edward Mandel House prove that. The Maine, same thing. Pearl Harbor, same thing. We knew in advance, let it happen anyway. Why? For obvious reasons. Fort Sumter, same thing. Over and over. And so, you know, we have the situation a couple of weekends ago on October 7th. And, you know, Christians are saying, we stand with Israel, pray for Israel. What about everybody else? You know, what about the casualties of, you know, women and children, innocent women and children everywhere? What about them, regardless of their geographic location or political affiliation, ostensibly? It's so interesting. You know, I all through since the 7th, you know, since the Monday following, last Monday, the 9th or 10th, I think, Monday was People's Day, right? But People's Day is too discriminatory. We just have to call it day. Maybe we don't call it day, you know, Columbus Day. Ever since then, I've been talking about Sam Keen's Faces of the Enemy, and it's amazing how, you know, the dehumanization and subjugation of a people before you, and the otherizing of a people before you, you know, as a preemptive measure to legitimize an attack on those people. And as I said yesterday, it's amazing. It is absolutely astonishing how savage and barbaric the people who are subjected to this propaganda become themselves. These people are animals. We need to get them. They are so. And then those people who are fed this kind of propaganda, they become the savages and barbarians themselves. And so, we, you know, run the risk of the cliche of becoming that which we hate. The old cliche. So it's interesting. Backing up, though, the three things that I would say from high to low: Patrick Claussen, the traditional way America gets to war. I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. It's very hard to see, for me to see, how the United States president can get us to war with Iran, which is what he said 10 years ago, war with Iran. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge. And I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMontrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraine, Ltd. at Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
So, by intensity of hatred, nations create in themselves the characters they imagine in their enemies. Hence it is that all passionate conflicts result in the interchange of characteristics, so wrote George William Russell. In simple terms, I would say, as I said, you know, listen to kind of from high to low. Big picture to micro, macro to micro. Listen to Patrick Claussen. We ought to just play that again. It's worth playing often, I think. Unbelievable. Is it true the traditional way America gets to war? That sounds shocking. And as I said, what's in a word? Why the word episode? An incident or event that is part of a progression or larger sequence. Sounds like Pike's letter to Mazzini, doesn't it? An incident or action standing out by itself, but more or less connected with a complete series of events. Sounds like Pike's letter, doesn't it? Foreign policy expert Patrick Claussen says, this is the traditional way America gets to war. What's that? False flag strategy of tension episodes. Yeah, let's start with that. Can we play that, please?
I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. And it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way of America gets to war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II, as David mentioned. You may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people might think Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall he had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Some people might think that Mr. Johnson wanted to send troops to Vietnam. You may recall he had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. We didn't go to war with Spain until the USS, until the Maine exploded. And may I point out that Mr. Lincoln did not feel he could call out the Federal Army until Fort Sumter was attacked, which is why he ordered the commander at Fort Sumter to do exactly that thing which the South Carolinians had said would cause an attack. So if, in fact, the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if somebody else started the war.
Uncomfortable laughter. It would be best if somebody else started the war. Do you hear this? Patrick Claussen, foreign policy expert. Is he a kook? I don't think so. He's there giving a speech at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Saber-rattling on Iran, you know. I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough, and it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Why would we want to do that? Do you hear that? Just itching. You know, what did John McCain say? Bomb, 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 Iran. Why? Been talking about this for years. Immediately after whatever happened on October 7th this year, there were a bunch of fingers pointing at Iran. I wonder why. So if, in fact, the Iranians aren't going to compromise, what does that mean? What constitutes compromise? It would be best if somebody else started the war. And what is the traditional way? Traditional way is false flag. So what happened on the 7th of this month? And you can go back further. Obviously, you have General Wesley Clark, former Supreme NATO Allied Commander, saying, you know, seven countries in 5 years, finishing off with Iran. You have the stovepiping of intelligence with the Iranian Directorate, which was similarly created to the Office of Special Plans, the OSP, which was used to stovepipe intelligence to promulgate the weapons of mass destruction lie. The Iranian Directorate. Why all of this effort? And there's one other quote that always sticks in the back of my mind, and maybe we'll play that when we come back. And, you know, I'll give you the three things that I keep sort of floating away from. Just the three main things from high to low people can look at, and then we'll move on. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Got a couple of these. I have a playlist titled Iran with and I've had it for quite some time, so long that I've forgotten about it. These things get deleted from time to time. The one I had titled Political Zionism versus Political Islam, YouTube decided, nah, they said that's, you know, that's anti-Semitic hate speech. Really, a playlist titled Political Zionism versus Political Islam is hate speech? And none of the videos in the list were videos I made. I thought that was interesting. So, um, Yeah. Let's see. There is the long version of this and the short version of this. Which one do we play? I think we'll play the short version, I guess. Sam Gardner wrote a paper about this over at the Century Foundation, I think it was. This is a million years ago. Back in 2006. September 18, which is, you know, curiously close to something, some historical date, September 18. It's about a week after some curious historical date that just seems to keep reemerging. Speaking of the traditional way things happen, Sam Gardner was on the Situation Room with with Wolf Blitzer, CNN Situation Room. So do we play the long version or the short version? Well, why not play the long version, right? Why not? Let's see. Now we'll play the short one. You know, things go on as usual, business as usual, and then all of a sudden we hear something like, you know, if Iran cannot, you know, like Patrick Claussen said, if the Iranians aren't going to compromise, what does that mean? Can you imagine somebody shows up at your house and says, you know, if you're not willing to compromise, what? I didn't come to your house. What's your problem, man? So Sam Gardner wrote a paper. I don't remember the title of it. I have it somewhere. It vanished from the Century Foundation. And it was an interesting. He talked about below the CNN line. This is one of the interesting things that he wrote about in that paper. Anyway, we'll do the short version of the September 18, 2006, almost 20 years ago. Maybe we should play, maybe we will. Maybe we'll play Wes Clark's, you know, that clip too after this. Sam Gardner said this all those years ago. Obviously, it sticks in my head. It just, it's always there. But this was interesting back in 2006. Go ahead, please.
In the new issue of Time magazine, the possibility of war with Iran is on the cover. How likely is a U.S. military strike, and would it lead to all-out war? Joining us now is retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Sam Gardner. He's taught strategy and military operations at the National War College, the Air War College, and the Naval War College. Colonel, thanks very much for coming in. You've just prepared a paper for the Century Foundation entitled Considering the U.S. Military Option for Iran. You speak to a lot of people plugged in. What is your bottom line? How close, in your opinion, is the U.S., the Bush administration, to giving that go-ahead order?
It's been given. In fact, we've probably been executing military operations inside Iran for at least 18 months. The evidence is overwhelming.
Let me press
sure.
you on that. When you say it's been given, the president says he wants diplomacy to work to convince the Iranian government right. to stop enriching uranium, to
sure.
not go forward. I would tell the Iranian people that we have no desire for conflict. He told David Ignatius of the Washington Post
sure.
the other day. So what does that mean? The order has been given.
We are conducting military operations inside Iran right now. The evidence is overwhelming from both the Iranians, Americans, and from congressional sources.
What is military operation?
Sure.
Define that.
Sure. They probably have had two objectives going back 18 months. The first was to gather intelligence. Where is the Iranian nuclear program? The second has been to prepare dissident groups for phase two, which will be the strike, which will come as the next phase, I think.
Preparing intelligence, that's understandable, using all sorts
sure.
of means. They
sure.
want to know what the Iranians are up to in terms of their
sure.
nuclear program. But are you suggesting that U.S. military forces, special operations forces, or others are on the ground right now in
yes,
Iran?
Yes, sir. Certainly. Absolutely clear. The evidence is overwhelming from lots of sources. And again, most of them you can read in the public. You know, Seymour Hersh has done good work on it, and there are lots of other people who have done that. I've talked to Iranians. I asked an Iranian ambassador to the IAEA, what's this I hear about Americans being there? He said to me, well, we've captured some people who work with them. We've confirmed that they're there.
Yeah, but, you know, these guys, the Iranians, you can't necessarily believe what they're saying. They could arrest some dissidents in Iran and say these are American spies. They do that all the time.
Sure. The House Committee on Emerging Threats tried to have a hearing some weeks ago in which they asked the Department of State and Defense to come and answer this question because it's serious enough to be answered without congressional approval, and they didn't come to the hearing. There are sources that I talked to on the Hill who believe that that's true, and it's being done without congressional oversight.
Look, I was once a Pentagon correspondent many years ago, and in those days and in these days, and as Jamie McIntyre just reported, and as you well know from your time of active duty at the Pentagon in the U.S. military, these guys are planning contingency operations for almost everything. If Canada goes to war against the United States, they've got a contingency plan.
Okay, different now. Two differences. Number one, we've learned from Time magazine today that some U.S. naval forces have been alerted for deployment. That is a major step. That's first. The second thing is the sources suggest the plan is not in the Pentagon. The plan has gone to the White House. That's not normal planning. When the plan goes to the White House, that means we've gone to a different
stage.
You
think it's possible there's a little psychological warfare being played on Ahmadinejad right now to rattle him, to spread the word, to put out this kind of information, to get him nervous, perhaps a little bit more agreeable to the diplomatic option?
It's possible. It's also possible that this path was selected a long time ago. You recall that even before Gulf II, that at a time when the president said, we have no plan, I have no plan on my desk, in the summer of 2002, we began bombing Iraq. Operation Southern Focus, without congressional approval, without the UN sanctions, we went ahead and began bombing.
Well, the argument at that time was if there were violations of the no-fly zone, U.S. warplanes were flying in the north and the south, and there were rockets or anti-aircraft fire going up, they could take those out.
Yes, but it was a campaign to begin the war before the war began. And, you know, I would suggest the evidence is there.
And so you see a similar pattern right now.
Exactly.
We're going to follow this closely. Colonel Sam Gardner, thanks very much. Okay. We'll look forward to reading your report that the Century Foundation is putting out as well.
There you go. That was 2006. A lot has happened. So many other things, you know, we could talk about. This is really just kind of sort of to focus in on the Iranian really, I guess, you know, what is best perhaps summarized by Wes Clark. Not long after that interview, Sam Gardner on CNN, the following year, just a few months later, was Wes Clark's Democracy Now! Interview with Amy Goodman. And then about 6 months after that, 7 months after that, was the Fora TV talk on his book tour. Same conversation, same subject matter. But, you know, Sam Gardner mentioned Seymour Hersh, the secret war with Iran. That's Hersh. Speaking of, you know, what Sam Gardner said, the evidence is overwhelming. There's overwhelming evidence of an interest to do something, to do what Wes Clark talked about. In fact, let's see. I always say that the Fora TV version of Wes Clark's remarks I prefer over the Democracy Now! Interview. Everybody points to the Democracy Now! Version. I don't like it because it's sort of glib and flippant. You know, there's some, this is funny kind of stuff. You know, the exchanges between Wes Clark and Amy Goodman, for example, and the audience obviously laughs. The for a TV installment of the same subject matter always strikes me as more sober-minded. So with that in mind, can we do that, please? Wes Clark, America's foreign policy coup, 7 countries in 5 years. Go ahead, please.
What happened at 9/11 is we didn't have a strategy, we didn't have bipartisan agreement, we didn't have American understanding of it, and we had instead a policy coup in this country. A coup. A policy coup. Some hard-nosed people took over the direction of American policy, and they never bothered to inform the rest of us. I went through the Pentagon 10 days after 9/11. I couldn't stay away from Mother Army. I went back there to see Don Rumsfeld. I'd worked for him as a White House fellow in the 1970s. All this is in a book. And I said, am I doing okay on CNN? He said, yeah, fine. He said, I'm thinking about it. He says, I read your book. And he said, this is a book that talks about the Kosovo campaign. And he said, I just want to tell you, he said, nobody's going to tell us where or when we can bomb. Nobody. He said, I'm thinking of calling this a floating coalition. What do you think about that? I said, well, sir, thanks for reading my book. And, he said, thanks. That's all the time I've got. Really? And I went downstairs. I was leaving the Pentagon, and an officer from the Joint Staff called me into his office and said, I want you to know, he said, sir, we're going to attack Iraq. And I said, why? He said, we don't know. He said, I said, well, did they tie Saddam to 9/11? He said, no. He said, but I guess it's they don't know what to do about terrorism. And so they think, but they can attack states, and they want to look strong. And so I guess they think if they take down a state, it will intimidate the terrorists. And, you know, it's like that old saying, he said, if the only tool you have is a hammer, then every problem has to be a nail. Well, I walked out of there pretty upset. And then we attacked Afghanistan. I was pretty happy about that. We should have. And then I came back to the Pentagon about 6 weeks later. I saw the same officer. I said, why haven't we attacked Iraq? We still going to attack Iraq? He said, oh, sir. He says, it's worse than that. He said, he pulled up a piece of paper off his desk. He said, I just got this memo from the Secretary of Defense's office. It says we're going to attack and destroy the governments in 7 countries in 5 years. We're going to start with Iraq, and then we're going to move to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. I said, 7 countries in 5 years. I said, is that a classified memo? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. He was about to show it to me. He said, because I want to talk about it. And I sat on this information for a long time, for about 6 or 8 months. I was so stunned by this, I couldn't begin to talk about it. And I couldn't believe it would really be true, but that's actually what happened. These people took control of the policy in the United States. And I realized then, it came back to me, a 1991 meeting I had with Paul Wolfowitz. You know, in 2001, he was Deputy Secretary of Defense, but in 1991, he was the Under Secretary of Defense for Policy. It's the number three position in the Pentagon. And I had gone to see him when I was a one-star general. I was commanding the National Training Center. I had met him one time. He said, if you ever get to Washington, come look me up. They always say that. Well, I was there in Washington. It was a Friday afternoon. I'd visited Colin Powell. He'd given me 5 minutes of his precious time and sent me on my way. And I was bored in the Pentagon. And I thought, I'll just go, who can I see? I think I'll see Wolfowitz. So I called and up there, he was available. Scooter Libby came to the door. I met Scooter for the first time, and he brought me in. And I said to Paul, I said, and this is 1991, I said, Mr. Secretary, you must be pretty happy with the performance of the troops in Desert Storm. And he said, well, yeah, he said, but not really, he said, because the truth is we should have gotten rid of Saddam Hussein, and we didn't. And this was just after the Shia uprising in March of 91, which we had provoked, and then we kept our troops on the sidelines and didn't intervene. He said, but one thing we did learn, he said, we learned that we can use our military in the region in the Middle East, and the Soviets won't stop us. He said, and we've got about 5 or 10 years to clean up those old Soviet client regimes. Syria, Iran, Iraq, before the next great superpower comes on to challenge us. And it was like, you know, I'm coming out of the Mojave Desert. I've been training troops. I haven't been thinking geostrategy for some time. And suddenly a guy just sort of shoves this nugget at you. Well, you remember it. It was a pretty stunning thing. You mean the purpose of the military is to start wars and change governments? It's not to sort of deter conflict? We're going to invade countries? And, I my mind was spinning. And I put that aside. It was like a nugget that you hold on to. This country was taken over by a group of people with a policy coup. Wolfowitz and Cheney and Rumsfeld, and you could name a half dozen other collaborators from the Project for a New American Century. They wanted us to destabilize the Middle East, turn it upside down, make it under our control. It went back to those comments in 1991. Now, did anybody ever tell you that? Was there a national dialogue on this? Did senators and congressmen stand up and denounce this plan? Was there a full-fledged American debate on it? Absolutely not. And there still isn't. And that's why we're failing in Iraq. Because Iran and Syria know about the plan. All you have to do is read the Weekly Standard and listen to Bill Kristol, and he blabbermouths it all over the world. Richard Pearl the same way. They could hardly wait to finish Iraq so they could move into Syria. It was like a laydown. Oh, our legions are going to go in there. This wasn't what the American people voted George Bush into office. Well, they didn't actually vote him into office, but it wasn't what many of the people who... It wasn't what he campaigned on. He campaigned on a humble foreign policy, the most arrogant foreign policy in American history. He campaigned on no peacekeeping, no nation building, and here he is with Afghanistan and Iraq. It's astonishing. So the root of the problem is not how many troops are in Iraq. Please believe me. Don't be mad if you're a Democrat at your Democratic congressman because they can't reduce the troops and frustrate the president. That's not the issue. And if you're a Republican, don't be mad at the Democrats because they're fussing with the troops. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, if you're an American, you ought to be concerned about the strategy of the United States in this region. What is our aim? What is our purpose? Why are we there? Why are Americans dying in this region? That is the issue.
Okay. So that's probably a good way to sort of end that because, that is the issue. As Wes Clark said there, pretty astonishing. You know, why are we, what is our aim in the, why are we in the region? What is our aim? What is our purpose? Why are Americans dying in this region? Why are we there? Why are we, you know, committing untold resources? What is it, $2 trillion in Afghanistan? Why in Afghanistan? It's a bigger strategy in the grand scheme of things on the grand chessboard. If you can win in that region, you know, RL-33627, NATO's, NATO and Afghanistan, a test of the transatlantic alliance. You can win there. You can win anywhere. The region where empires go to die. And so that's, you know, if you're going to conquer the world, you got to make sure that you can do it there because you can't do it there. Can't do it anywhere. So there's a bigger agenda, broader agenda. But, you know, how many people think about these things? So the three things that I would encourage folks to really look at from high to low are probably, you know, Patrick Claussen talking about the traditional way America gets to war, a foreign policy expert. This guy is not some kook on some blog. This is an influential guy. The traditional way America gets to war. So if in fact the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if somebody else started the war. What? People actually talk like that? And, you know, Wes Clark just validated it. We heard Sam Gardner, who wrote a paper and talked about above and below the CNN line. What's that all about? The traditional way America gets to war. So you start there. That'll shock your conscience. The traditional way America gets to war. It's LIHOP, HIHOP, and MIHOP, which are acronyms for let it happen on purpose, help it happen on purpose. That's what happened with the Afghan Mujahideen. Brzezinski bragged about it in 1998. Well, you know, we created it. We didn't force the Soviets to invade, but we created a situation that made it virtually impossible for them not to. You just heard in the clip, Wes Clark giving you the same scenario. You know, where he talks about the Shia uprising, 1991 uprising that we provoked and then pulled our troops out of the way. Same thing. And it has happened so many times. You know, the provocation of Saddam Hussein when George Herbert Walker Bush said that he invaded his neighbor, attacked his neighbor, Kuwait. That was a provocation as well. That is the strategy. That's the traditional way America gets to war. Every single time. There are no legitimate conflicts. There are only those that are orchestrated and engineered. There are no terrorists except those that are created. And I suppose the real terrorists are the ones that create them. Why? You know, because you have your stated objective, your aim, which is, you know, to, as Wes Clark said, turn the Middle East upside down, make it under our control for a variety of reasons. James Corbett did his piece back in 2017 titled, it was Interview 1326, James Corbett breaks down the Middle East. And there's the video, YouTube, still on YouTube, making sense of the Middle East. James Corbett on Declare Your Independence. So, James Corbett on Ernest Hancock's Declare Your Independence. And, you know, James Corbett's Big Oil, How and Why Big Oil Conquered the World, is top of the list in his show notes. The Yom Kippur War and the Kissinger Plot. Meeting minutes from 1973, Bilderberg meeting planning oil crisis. We played a clip from that recently, and here we are again. Isn't it interesting? Something happened. We're led to believe Hamas attacked Israel. What is Hamas? Where is Hamas? Well, it's a non-state actor. It's a headless terrorist organization. All right. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure. And the EaseOff installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay. I'm convinced. Where can I get my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com. That's EaseOff.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio.
only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.